I didn't go back with him, and he said he didn't survive the first firefight, whether the Germans got him or somebody else. He said, I don't know, and I don't want to know. Mm-hmm. But he said, you just didn't go back,
okay.
Unless the whole unit was ordered to mm-hmm. go back, but you didn't. Mm-hmm. You didn't go back.
When my dad went into Bastogne, he went in on the 19th of December, and he came out on the 2nd or the 20th of February.
Okay.
So that was another 2 months
mm-hmm.
of combat there. He, on a kind of a personal note, he always hated the Christmas Carol Silent Night.
Because of the Germans?
They could hear him. Yep, mm-hmm. they could hear him.
Mm-hmm.
And he didn't like it much. And there was times he'd get a little melancholy. You know, if you ever heard Bing Crosby, I think it was, White Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
That was another one because they played it. And he just said, you know, that was a tough, tough time.
Did they talk about being homesick, getting mail, sending mail, things like that, the food?
Whenever he would get cookies from his mother, they were always crumbs.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. He said, but I ate the crumbs.
They didn't. Dad said they didn't get much.
Mm-hmm.
But they were pretty well involved most of the time they were there.
And they were eating the K rations, I guess.
Like in the Bulge, they ate whatever the Germans could find after they captured them. Because they didn't have anything.
Whatever they could scavenge.
And he mm-hmm. said, of course, he told John and I that they took 10 Germans out of the barn, give them 4 rifles, and told them to go scavenge food, and if they didn't come back with the 4 rifles, the rest of the Germans weren't going to eat.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But he said they knew where stuff was hid. He said they come back with hams and mm-hmm. and canned goods and things like that, you know, jar stuff. They knew where to look. He said, we didn't have any idea where to look.
Right.
And they would shoot milk cows or whatever and dress them. And, mm-hmm. and he said one thing about the Germans, when you surrendered, the regular German army, when they surrendered, they were done.
Mm-hmm.
He said once they started cooking, he said, you know, there wasn't enough of them guys left to know they were in the business. He said, you just slung your M1 over your shoulder and got a line,
mm-hmm.
took a plate, got something to eat. Mm-hmm. But when they came out of the Bulge, his company, there was 34 of them left, officers and men. It was all that was left of them.
Mm-hmm.
And they came out on the 14th of January, and then they went back into the front line on the 21st of January. Then they had stopped the Bulge and pinched it off, and the Americans wanted to cut that in two and cut that German army off that was out there. And Monty didn't want to.
Yeah, Patton wanted to do that.
And that's what Patton wanted to do. That's what all the Americans wanted to do. So they took Dad's company, since there was only 34 of them, officers and men left. One of the generals decided to send a patrol across from the American side through that narrow gap to the English to see how far across it was and see what was going out through there. And so they decided to do it at platoon strength, which is like 36 guys, so they just used their company. Mm-hmm. That's the reason they only got 7 days, because
mm-hmm.
they were a platoon-sized company, Dad said it took them 3 nights. They couldn't move during the day,
mm-hmm.
but in the daytime they would mark down what vehicles were getting out and mm-hmm. estimating soldiers that were moving out, and then they joined up with the See, English on the other side.
When the Bulge started, why it became obvious that Eisenhower needed to divide the command, so the British had a lot of 30 Corps and so on over on the northwest side where the Bulge was, and the American 1st Division and the other one, they were on that north side of the Bulge, Eisenhower put Bradley's troops and army underneath Montgomery's
mm-hmm.
direction on that. And so Montgomery's going to tidy up the front. So he was having the Big Red One pull back and do some other things. Well, the Big Red One held the shoulder on the north side of the Bulge, and the Germans couldn't dislodge him. They kept going on west, and the of course the troops that got hit real hard is that 101st the 106th division that was just fresh green on the Chenier Eiffel. They got overrun, and a whole about 6,000 of them surrendered. In the 2nd division, they pulled out of the Hurricane Forest area. They were to the south side of the 106,
mm-hmm.
And those were pretty hardened troops, but they'd been beat up and from that Hurricane Forest, and those were a lot of the guys that were retreating that Steve's dad's people run into when they're coming into Bastogne, and those guys were all heading west,
mm-hmm.
and it was pretty tumultuous time because they didn't know exactly how strong they were,
mm-hmm.
but you had the 6th Panzer Army hitting on the north end, and you had the 5th Panzer Army on the south side under Manteuffel. They're the ones that were really smacking Bastogne hard, and they wanted to take it, and then Hitler decided they wanted to take Bastogne no matter what, and they couldn't get it done. I thought it was interesting how they had those paratroopers, and they had some tank groups that were in that pocket as well, and some artillery, and they'd have some tanks or two with those outlying villages where the paratroops were, and they were scattered in between, and now they would hold off German attacks, and they didn't have a lot of ammunition, but they held them back, and it was Patton didn't get in there.
I liked it on tape,
mm-hmm.
okay. because I can track, you know, when I'm yeah. going up and down. Around, it's fascinating. On, you know, I don't do a lot of audiobooks.
Yeah.
That one's really good.
So when you were growing up, you had your father, but in the community, it was just that those men did this job. They were heroes. They were great men.
Well, as I grew up, farmer community, redneck community, whatever you want to say, I never really heard anything said about the ones that didn't go, other than the fact that they didn't go.
That's exactly right. There was a couple of them around, and all my dad would say was, he didn't go.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And part of, I go and I do a thing for the sixth grade
right.
teacher up there at ASME. I think it's important that they understand, because it's not that far removed. And what I try to do is I try to pick out a kid in school that they still know, and mm-hmm. say his granddad
right.
did this. Or there's fewer and fewer of mm-hmm. them in town, but I say the guy that ran the barbershop down there, or you know, mm-hmm. I try to get them to at least connect to that guy did this.
Okay.
Or if they're not there, I try to get them connect with, this is Adam's grandpa.
Mm-hmm.
It's my dad, but it's Adam's granddad.
Okay.
And I try to get, because in the history book up here, World War II is about that big.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, they don't understand mm-hmm. How important that was to the world.
Mm-hmm. And to yeah. the individuals. What about you, Sid?
Well, I've been interested. My folks were interested in history And we've read a lot of books. I've read a lot on the Civil War, mm-hmm. and quite a bit about the First World War, and then the, of course, World War II, and you read Berlin Diary, how the things, how Hitler began to get power in Germany in the 30s, and then read Ernie Pyle's book, We're Brave Men, that's an mm-hmm. excellent book, and he's got another one. Well, it was printed by the University Press of Kansas, Ernie Pyle's story, and some of his, The Brave Men was a lot about the Italian campaign and North African campaign, and then he was in it after D-Day, came in a couple days after, when there were still a lot of bodies around and so on, and then he was there and described the mm-hmm. when we stuck in the hedgerows and just bloody hedgerow to hedgerow trying to get to break out so they could really move. And when you talked about that gigantic raid they made at Calais, I think they just leveled the place, and the German Panzerlehr division had been brought from over in France. They were in that area, and they just pulverized Panzerlehr, and that's when they broke out, when activated Patton's Third Army, and he made that run off toward Paris. But it's interesting how the Germans, Hitler had them counterattack in there, and they got in, and some Americans fought some terrific defensive battles there trying to keep them from getting any further, and then the Americans wanted to cut them off, with the British on the north and the Americans on the south, and that's how, where the Falaise Gap came in.
Okay.
And they killed a lot of Germans. Germans lost most of their equipment, but mm-hmm. some of them got out. That's where Squirt was, I don't know if he was a half-track gunner or driver.
He was both. He was a TC for a while, tank commander.
Yeah, and they were one of the first ones that linked up with the Canadians as they closed the gap, and they were cussing because they didn't think they got there. Canadians got there fast enough. We bagged the whole bunch.
We were younger, and like I say, TB and stuff. But I know Dad scared us really bad one time, and he wouldn't talk about it for a long time after that, because it was just an innocent enough deal. But we were watching some show on TV, and this guy takes a piano wire out of a piano, and he's going to go garrote this guy and kill him quiet. And Dad said, and of course we said, what do you mean? And he said, well, he ain't never done that, because he said they bubble and whistle and crackle, and he said it damn sure is anything but quiet.
Mm-hmm.
And we were just kind of looking at him, and we were laying on the floor, and Dad had me stand up. And he said, if you want to kill somebody quiet, and he just reached around behind me, and he just pinched my nose shut, put his hand over my mouth, and he said, you stick that bayonet right under the rib cage, and you cut the bottom of the heart out, and he said, he don't make a sound, and he dies right there.
Mm-hmm.
And just scared the gizzard. Because
mm-hmm.
you knew from the way he told it that he had done this.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
And of course, as soon as he saw the look on John's face, Dad just walked out of the room, and for weeks he wouldn't watch mm-hmm. TV with us or nothing, because mm-hmm. he knew he had just scared the gizzard out of a 17-year-old and,
mm-hmm.
and a 14-year-old, and mm-hmm. but you just knew
right.
that he had done that. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, it was just obvious, and he said, they don't make a sound.
Okay, all right, I'm going to ask you to think about, now you know that these tapes are going to be transcribed, and they will be in the Cimarron Library, Kansas State Historical Society, and the Library of Congress. So is there anything that you think is important that you haven't said? I'll just give you a minute, and I'm going to turn it off. And anything that you think is important for future generations? Because you are, of course, the second, generation. So
one thing I think is, in the high school, we used to have big walnut board there that had fellows that served in the Army in World War II, and they had their names, and then the ones that had been killed, they had stars by them, and they were in a line down to the bottom.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, we've got the big memorial now down at the courthouse ground, so that kind of takes away that need, because it covers all Gray Countyans,
mm-hmm,
who were killed, whether it's in the First World War, Spanish American War, or World War II, or Korea, or Vietnam.
I just don't think there's enough emphasis put on the sacrifices that any generation that fights a war has.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they've kind of downplayed them since Vietnam, even,
right,
and especially after that one, and it's not fair to the,
mm-hmm,
to the soldiers. Of course, I've got,
right,
a son-in-law that's a soldier now, but
mm-hmm,
whether you agree or disagree with what's going on, those people are over there fighting for us and,
mm-hmm,
and for our country, and that's a pretty noble thing.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I think in respect to the World War II guys, I think it's just a shame that we didn't get more documented while they were still here.
Mm-hmm.
Because one, you couldn't get them to talk about it, because that generation was not going to do something that came off as bragging or,
mm-hmm,
you know, puffing their chest out. You know, it only came from my dad late in his life, and we pestered him quite a bit because we wanted to know.
Right.
And, you know, each day, you know, we've lost a couple here just this last week. I mean, I don't know what the statistic is. I hear it's like 1,000 a day of the World War II veteran dying. It may or may not be right, but,
mm-hmm,
I mean, they're passing away so fast.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, here I am trying to say what my dad told me.
Right.
It's not him saying it.
I know.
It's what he told me and me saying it. And, mm-hmm, and we all know that it's not as accurate as when he says it.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it's just a shame we didn't get started on this 15 years ago or,
mm-hmm,
whatever it would have been.
Mm-hmm. But those guys,
a lot of those stories too have come down with friendships that you had. Like I was a good friend of Steve's dad.
Oh yeah.
And I learned some things that he'd tell me over time,
which would spur, you know, I'd find something out, and that's true, because Jack Davidson told me a few things. He was an old farmer in that generation, mm-hmm, and he told me just a couple little tidbits about what my dad had done. So then I'd go, "Hey, Dad, what about this?
Right.
Well, how'd you know about that?" You know,
mm-hmm,
and I said, "Well, Jack told me, you know," or I would say, "Well,
what's he doing talking about?"
Yeah, you know, well,
that's the first
reaction. What's he saying? Yeah,
what's he doing telling you any of that?
Yeah, mm-hmm,
you know,
a lot of our Boy Scout trips with Don, and I knew Don very well, and we had a lot of fun. I'd kid him about my Democrat politics, and he'd tell me about the Republican politics, and he'd tell me, you know, his different stories. We had a lot of fun. We had some funny things that happened to us with our Boy Scout experiences.
Mm-hmm.
And Buford knows one of those. When we
but
left him out on the mountain all night.
And not all the stories he told were bad things.
No,
they had some lifelong
relationships. He tells about walking down, they were just about a squad. They were walking down the road and had hedgerows on both sides. And walking up the hill, and a Tiger tank comes over the hill the other way. He said, we took off down the road, and he said, you know, run a ways. And then he said, I jumped a hedge. And they had a little guy in their squad they called Rabbit. He tried three times, couldn't get over the hedge, couldn't jump high. And that Tiger tank was shooting the roadway up right behind him. Didn't shoot him. And he'd run and try to jump the hedge. He'd fall back down and get up. And as soon as he get out on the road, they'd start shooting behind him again with that machine gun. And they'd run him until he couldn't. He finally just run into the hedge and laid down. And the Tiger just turned around and went back over the hill. He said, them guys just playing with him.
Charlie Thomas told me a story. He was in the Army in the Pacific and on Okinawa, and they were fighting in Naha, and how they used the gravestones, some big gravestones in the cemetery, for cover. And he talked about one area they had to cross where there were a lot of Japanese fire, and he talked about this one fellow was kind of heavy, and he went running across there with his stuff a flopping and everything, and bullets just a kicking up around him. He finally got the other side. He said everybody was real serious till he got over there by, and then they started laughing at how funny that was. When when he went across. He was one fellow I forgot to tell you about.
Charlie. Well, I'm sure they had their brand of humor that also was very important to get him through that.
Yeah. Well, we were talking, seeing the show, and the guys are in the wine cellar and they're drunk, and the Germans attack and they're drunk out there and they can't fight. And Dad said, "Well, they ain't been there." Mm-hmm. He said, "I guarantee you, the first round comes in, you're stone cold sober. I don't care how long you've been drinking." Mm-hmm. He said, "If you've been there, you are." He said, "Your adrenaline just takes over." And he said, "When the firefight's over, you may be drunk again, but," he said, "when it's going on," he said, "there's nothing wrong with you."
I got a picture here, and this is, it's a fairly famous picture, but it's Eisenhower in the 101st before. Mm-hmm. This is my dad right here.
Okay.
And the article is about a guy in North Dakota, but Eisenhower had just called, "Are there any Kansas boys here?" Mm-hmm. And they were all coming forward. And
I'd seen that picture, but I didn't know.
And that's what the story is about. You know, Eisenhower's asking, you know, "Is there any Kansas boys here?"
That's Gene right there on this side.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Well, I'll be darned.
I just want to add a couple of things to this, kind of getting on a tail end of this. I don't know if you knew, Gerald's dad has a Purple Heart, had a Purple Heart from Battle of the Bulge. He was one of two that made it out of his group because they were in the, they were the ones in the hedgerow.
Mm-hmm.
Early in the Battle of the Bulge. And he wouldn't ever talk about it. None of his kids never heard a word. When he was in Wichita, his last month, he and I talked because my dad was in World War II in the South Pacific. But Dad's stories, I mean, he kept up with his buddies. That's where we went on vacations. We had a huge group of them, probably 30, that all did things in the South Pacific in the 13th Army Air Corps. And I knew what he did, but they never talked about that. They just talked about stuff in the South Pacific movie, what the Seabees did. They were on the other beach. Right. They were doing the same things the Seabees were doing. What they were making was mustard gas, and you won't find that.
Yeah.
You won't find that in the history books.
Another guy that was in the South Pacific was Stan Shoup.
Yeah.
He grew up here. Mm-hmm. He was a partner with my dad in a gas station when they got back, and they were classmates. Stan was one of the 6 best marksmen in his Marine battalion.
Mm-hmm.
He has 7 campaign stripes or stars, whatever they gave the Marines, from the South Pacific. It was every major operation. He said, "Whenever you see a Marine with all those," he said, "drinks are free."
Yeah. They had 3.
He had all of them because he was assigned security for the Admiral. He said, "I spent every campaign floating around on a battleship with the other 5 best marksmen."
Mm-hmm.
He said, "Think about that. The 6 best marksmen out of
never
our
sea action."
Yeah, and we're out there floating around on a battleship as security.
They were protecting the Admiral, though.
Yeah, yeah. Floating around out there. He said, I'm glad I'm here, but I'm, you know.
Mm-hmm.
He said, "Got in more than one fight." When they see all those, you know, and then you tell them after a while, "Well, actually, I was on security for the Admiral," you know, and then, but, you know, I'd already had 20 drinks on them, so.
Right. You wanted to finish.
Well, I got an email a couple of days ago from a friend it was a tribute to Bob Hope and all his supportive services.
Mm-hmm.
So I emailed back to Jim. I said, "This is really special to me. My dad had pictures of Bob Hope in the thatched tent covered thing on the island." And I had saw those pictures. And I said, that was 1942. I saw Bob Hope in Guam on Anderson Air Force Base in 1972.
Mm-hmm.
The same person, some of the same people. And it just blew me away.
Now, I've forgotten the names of the ladies.
Yeah.
But
I saw Eartha Kitt.
My dad has no use for Bob Hope because they pulled him out of the front line to go to a USO show with Bob Hope and a couple of female stars, and he was kind of rainy and foggy, so he wouldn't come out because he didn't want to chance getting pneumonia, and the ladies come out and did their performances for him. So my dad wouldn't even watch Bob Hope on the radio or listen to him or watch him on TV and all the good things he did. But the one show he didn't do, my dad happened to be at, he wasn't worth a hoot from then on. You know,
I do want to add what you said. Some of the men that I visited with told me that it was the first time they had ever talked about their war experiences because they wanted to come home They wanted to forget about it and get on with their life.
That's true.
Mm-hmm.
My mother used to get after my dad a lot over money sometimes, and Dad say, "Oh," he said, "you're just one bullet away from being alive or dead, and I'm alive."
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And everything else just really didn't stack up.
Right. Yeah.
You know, the mortgage, the the wheat made good or bad or anything else, or whether you got South 40 work today or tomorrow, he was just pretty damn glad to have another day to live.
Mm-hmm. And, okay, I'm going to turn this off because this tape's almost.